Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Do you remember during the Obama years when House Speaker John Boehner was either in a bromance or at war with the president? Well, here we are in the Trump years. The House Speaker is Nancy Pelosi of California. And the storyline between these two, between Trump and Pelosi, has recently become more personal and more volatile than ever. And that's where we begin my conversation with the political junkie. Ken Rudin joins us from the Washington, D.C. area. Hello, Ken.
Good morning, Beth.
So give me your take on this Trump-Pelosi battle. Give me your adjectives.
Boy, I have a thesaurus in front of me.
Yeah, I bet.
That works. But you know something? It's become more personal and more volatile because Donald Trump is more personal and more volatile. When he is attacked for any reason, if he's criticized for any reason, he will fire back 10 times more. So that's always been the way he acts, and it's certainly the way he acts with Nancy Pelosi, because the feeling is that she is winning. I mean, at least with the media and at least with the commentators out there, that it feels like she is getting under his skin, and so when she says something like this, like he needs intervention, or he is definitely part of a cover up, it just riles him, and he loses it, and so it's probably the most toxic relationship I could think of, by far, between any president and any House Speaker.
Ah, we'll get back to that point in a moment. I think it helps for everybody to hear some of the back and forth that's happening, just to set the stage. Negotiations over an infrastructure bill fell apart last week. There was a bailout for farmers that was being worked on that didn't happen. I want to play this mashup by MSNBC. You're going to hear the president comment about the speaker, but this clip starts with Speaker Pelosi describing the president's behavior.
First, pound the table, walk out the door. What? Next time, have the TV cameras in there while I have my say. That didn't work for him either. And now this time, another temper tantrum.
It was sad when I watched Nancy all moving, the movement and the hands and the craziness. And I watched it. That's, by the way, a person that's got some problems.
I pray for the president of the United States. I wish that his family or his administration or his staff would have an intervention.
I haven't changed very much. Been very consistent. I'm an extremely stable genius. Okay.
Maybe he wants to take a leave of absence. I don't know.
Did you hear what she said about me long before I went after her? Did you hear? She made horrible statements. She knows they're not true. She said terrible things. So I just responded in kind. Look, you think Nancy's the same as she was? She's not. Maybe we can all say that.
All right. It's pretty intense, right, Ken?
Wait. I think I heard the recess bell. I think fifth graders need to report to recess immediately.
Yeah. And the whole thing about fifth graders, too, came up because Nancy Pelosi said, anyway, it goes on and on with the name calling.
No. Fish that. Basically, somebody compared Donald Trump to a fifth grader. And Nancy Pelosi said to that member of Congress, do not insult fifth graders like that.
Right. He says he's an extremely stable genius. He's given her a nickname now. He's called her Crazy Nancy, saying she's not the same person. She's lost it. You know, it's one thing to kind of be a spectator to this fight. It's another to say, what's this doing to governing? What's this doing to the work that needs to be done?
See, that's actually the real question, the most important question, because it's one thing to sit back and say, oh, those two wackos, or what's going on here? It's just so remarkable. But the fact is, government is not working. I mean, when the president says, because the Democrats are investigating me, we can't have an infrastructure bill, well, we know that's malarkey, because as soon as he stormed out of that meeting last week, he went straight to an outside podium where there were already signs, you know, placards saying, no obstruction, no, you know, no collusion. And so it was already planned that he would walk out. And plus the fact that the Democrats have been doing these investigations for months. So why suddenly in the middle of an infrastructure bill did he walk out and say, well, you know, the Democrats have crossed the line? The fact is, that if he says he's not going to work with the Democrats, I mean, it's one thing to not have infrastructure, and as bad as that is, but there are things that have to be done, like a debt ceiling, like a budget, like making government work. And if the president is going to use the idea that investigations are going on, and therefore I can't work with the Democrats on getting the role of government to be finished, then, I mean, we're in a stage where we've never had that. Even when you think of other presidents who have been impeached, and, of course, in our lifetime, you have Richard Nixon, who was about to be impeached, and Bill Clinton, who was, they still got government working, whether you agree with the impeachment or not. This is a threat that could result in upheaval in the entire thing of governance.
Let's talk for a moment about the political history of presidents and speakers. The two positions, by their nature, are going to have some fussy times with each other. Characterize this compared to some others that stand out to you.
Well, I mean, look, people have talked about the fact that Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill didn't really get along. They fought a lot, and, you know, they fought over tax cuts and Medicare and things like that. And they, you know, there was pretty much an ideological battle when Reagan pushed through his tax cuts in 1981. It was over Tip O'Neill's objection, and so kind of Reagan won some instances, some battles, lost some others. When Newt Gingrich was battling with Bill Clinton, I mean, Newt Gingrich became Speaker basically by running against Bill Clinton's gun control policies and tax policies, and helped the Republicans to the control of the House in 1994. But then Newt Gingrich overreached with impeachment and things like that, and he was forced to resign. But, you know, for the most part, well, of course, look, if they're on the same party, if it's George W. Bush and Dennis Hastert, or if it's Barack Obama and Nancy Pelosi, a lot gets done because you have the House together. But for the most part, I've never seen a relationship so toxic, so personal, so infantile, but also so damaging to the prospect of government getting done. Even when Barack Obama and John Boehner, when John Boehner was the Speaker, even though they didn't really get along that well, Boehner knew that impeachment was not going to happen, that the overturning of the Affordable Care Act was not going to overturn. He was basically, you're not going to get rid of Obamacare when you have Obama in the White House. So Boehner's basic problem was fighting with his own Republican Tea Party. But this is just different. It's juvenile, it's infantile, it's scary, and the fact that Trump is about to launch, or is launched, a bid for his second term, you know that a lot of it is about politics and appealing to the base.
Well, don't you think it sounds like the last campaign? I think this fight sounds more like Clinton-Trump.
Well, yeah, there's truth to that. And, of course, there are some people who will point out, perhaps justifiably, that it's not a coincidence that the way Donald Trump talked about Hillary Clinton and other women is similar to the way he's talking about Nancy Pelosi, that, you know, he talked about her movement and her hands, that she has problems. You know, I mean, he retweeted a video that was that's been circulating on the Internet that shows her basically losing it, because it was a doctored video and talked about, you know, they would use only the more embarrassing things about Nancy Pelosi, her stammering and stuttering and things like that. And so when Donald Trump says she has problems, it's part of the Republican narrative to make Nancy Pelosi as if she's losing it. And again, it's become personal. It's not ideological. It's not about principle. It's just about tactics and churlishness.
If you're just joining us, it's a bit of a Monday on a Tuesday. I'm talking with Ken Rudin, the political junkie.
Beth, why would they be just joining us? They should have been here from the moment we started talking.
We can only hope, Ken.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
The backdrop to all of this is this discussion that's happening about whether to start impeachment proceedings or not. So I want to go to something we referenced, and that is comments by Speaker Pelosi from last Wednesday. It's quick, so listen closely.
This president is obstructing justice, and he's engaged in a cover-up. And that could be an impeachable offense.
So the word cover-up became a trigger, but the point that she's saying that there could be an impeachable offense is a significant shift in where she's been on this question all along.
That's absolutely correct. And she, Nancy Pelosi, is under such pressure from her Democratic colleagues because there are more and more members of Congress, which is a big change from maybe just a couple of months ago, but more and more Democrats who would not even think about the I word, the impeachment word, are suddenly saying this man should be impeached. And Nancy Pelosi well knows what happened to Bill Clinton when that impeachment was over and done with. Bill Clinton not only was not removed from office by the Senate, but he wound up more popular than ever. And she fears, Nancy Pelosi fears, that Donald Trump could turn to his base and say, well, look, the Senate didn't kick me out of office. It was a failure. I win once again. But I think what Nancy Pelosi is doing is exactly right. I know there are some Democrats who are very impatient, but she's going to wait to see what happens in the courts. There are courts decisions out there. There are subpoenas out there where members are demanding tax records. They're amending his business records. And for the most part, from the indications we've seen, that the courts will agree with the Democrats that the American people deserve and must see his personal financial information, his tax returns. So if he doesn't release them, or if what he does release, we learn that some chicanery is going on, then very well she could say, look, you know, I can't hold back the tide of impeachment any longer. Something is wrong here, and I'm going to accede to that. And we'll just see where the American people are.
Are you more now of the opinion that that's the direction this will go, that some sort of impeachment proceedings are inevitable?
There's a big difference between impeachment hearings and beginning the process. And I think what Nancy Pelosi is doing is setting the stage for the beginning of the process in that I want to hear what the courts have to say. And if the courts show, if what we hear from the courts is that there's some, you know, some wrongdoing by the president. Again, this is just hypothetical. But if there's wrongdoing by the president, or if he continues to ignore subpoenas, I think that the Democrats may have no choice but to begin proceedings. Now, there are some people, maybe in moderate districts, there are some Democrats who say, oh, no, don't make me go through this, because clearly the American people are not for it. And if you think of the early days of 73, 74, when they were talking about Nixon impeachment, most of the country was not in favor of it. It wasn't until these hearings went on when we learned more and more about the things that were going on behind the scenes. And I'm guessing that maybe during these proceedings, impeachment proceedings, we'll learn enough to either have the American people behind an impeachment process, or they'll say, no, there's no there. Of course, the difference between Nixon and Clinton is that social media and the Fox Newses of the world will stand by President Trump no matter what. And so I think this will be a much more volatile and much more angry and corrosive hearings than we've ever seen in our history.
And all of that could be running on a parallel track to the presidential campaign.
Absolutely.
You know, the timeline might match up. So what do you think this does to the race for the presidency?
Well, for example, if there were some Democrats who were saying impeach him, and there are other Democrats who say let's not talk about him, let's not obsess about Donald Trump, that could determine how voters feel as well. Remember also with Nixon and Clinton, both were in their second term. They've already been reelected, I should point out, overwhelmingly, and yet the impeachment things went on. Right now, this is coming before the election. Donald Trump is running, and there are 23, 24 Democrats and counting who have to decide what should be the focus of the 2020 election. Is it Donald Trump, or is it health care and tax equality and gender issues? So the Democrats have a dilemma just as much as Nancy Pelosi and Donald Trump does for what's going on
just
and what the conversation should be.
One point there, you just talked about what the Democrats need to do, but what does all this do for or against Trump campaigning for a second term?
Well, you know, there are some people who think that Donald Trump is deliberately trying to goad the Democrats into pushing for impeachment, and then he'll go to his base and say that these out-of-control Democrats are trying to nullify the results of the 2016 campaign. And for the most part, his base agrees with that. He feels that
fires them up, then,
delegitimize his presidency. And, I mean, look, he has a hold on his base that very few presidents have ever had. He's very effective when it comes to that. And, I mean, that's the risks. And that's the dilemma that Nancy Pelosi is under, that she's strained, being pulled by one direction from Democrats who want to see him impeached, and pulled by others who say, "by look, you know, this could not prove, that could prove successful at all, and it could backfire on us." That's what she's wrestling with.
All right, so we might have to leave that sit for the moment. I do want to touch a few other quick topics, and since we talked last week, Nevada's had this legislation added to the national abortion debate that continues moving along, a bill that would ease the abortion restrictions, likely headed for the governor's desk. I don't know where it stands actually at the moment. But about Nevada having that women majority legislature, Ken, and about this counter-abortion legislation, it's interesting when stories are making headlines across the U.S., Louisiana, for example, today. The Nevada alternative legislation isn't brought up in every one of them.
The contrast is astounding. When we went through that argument and angst over what was going on in Alabama and other states like Missouri and Georgia, Kentucky, Ohio, other states that were putting in anti-abortion restrictions, some of them almost draconian in some ways. And then you have Nevada, as you point out, the only state in the country with a female majority state legislature. And you see in Alabama all the white men, you know, voting for abortion restrictions. It is a little jarring. And so, you know, do elections matter? You know, we always like to say elections matter, and they certainly matter in Nevada. You have a pro-choice, pro-abortion rights governor, Steve Sisolak, who's going to sign a bill whenever it comes to his desk. And you have a state legislature that is majority women. It is jarring with all the headlines about all the restrictions going on to see a state like Nevada, which is a clear swing state in the 2020 election. You see Nevada moving the opposite direction, which is not the way the headlines have been showing us the last couple of weeks.
All right, final question. It's going to be a curveball here, but have you seen a campaign button yet for either Eric Swalwell or Kamala Harris?
Of course.
You have?
Of course.
All right. Are they in your collection?
Of course. They are. I mean, for speaking of Nevada, I mean, Kamala Harris not only has a very favorable California primary coming up on March 3rd, Nevada, which is the third state in the process, also seems to is next door to California. So if I don't have a Kamala Harris button in May of 2019, then I'm not as big as a collector as I like to tell people. So
it's like, please. It's like punctuation, Ken. Kamala Harris.
Kamala, yeah, Kamala Harris.
All right, hold that thought till next week. Got it?
I'll see you later.
All right, thank you, Ken. He is the political junkie, Ken Rudin. We'll post a link to his website at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Cap Radio.